today. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Bread to Build podcast, a project dedicated to sharing the stories of the people who build and those who help move construction forward. If you like what we're doing, you want to support us on the journey and support our awesome guests, all we ask is you hit that little subscribe button. My name is Brett Goen. I'm the founder of Hammer. And today, as always, joined by my co-host, Matt Pinella.
As always, what's going on, everybody? It's Matt Pinella. Today, we've got somebody who is very highly respected in the industry, my industry specifically. Ryan Smith, known better as the Roof Slayer, specializes in roof cutting and framing, and we're going to be diving into his experience, his passion for the craft, his work ethic, and the next generation, and more. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Welcome to the show, Ryan. Proud to have you on.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's been this has been one I'm looking forward to for a long time, especially knowing what you do, how you do it. I know you probably know this by now, but there's a lot of younger people that absolutely look up to you for guidance in this industry because what you do is freaking incredible.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah. I just try to share, you know, the knowledge, try to get it out there. I've done that in a few different ways. So hopefully we can keep it going.
Yeah. A lot of people try to gatekeep stuff like that. So it's respectable. Before we get into it too crazy, tell us kind of how you got into this industry. Was carpentry in the family? Was it not?
Not really. As a kid, growing up, I grew up in a small town east of here, Oswego, New York. A good childhood friend of mine, his father was a contractor, did a lot of framing and stuff. So we would always go help on the weekends and whatnot and pick up scraps and this and that. And that kind of led into summer jobs working for his father, and went to college there, met my future wife, who's my wife now, and she's from the Buffalo area, which is how I ended up here, and left school, came out here, got on a framing crew, and they just kept going.
So what were you going to school for?
I had like a business, was a minor in business, and then music theory. I play guitar. I used to play a lot more. I don't play much now, but.
Okay. So you were early 20s going into construction?
I had done it.
Once you actually had the bags on and were building stuff, and you said you labored prior to that?
Yeah, I would say 20. Because I was full time.
So Ryan, back in your 20s, were you going by Guitar Slayer before it was Roof Slayer?
No. But it was a different scene back then compared to now. Just a job site in general, but specifically a framing crew. It's changed so much since I started. Just the materials that we're using, you know, the type of person that is willing to go out and you know, be in the hot sun or the snowstorm. It's a whole different thing we're working in now.
That's the cool part, is you've got to see the shift from then till now, because I've heard a lot of people say it, that things were a lot different then. The work ethic was different. And I'm sure you can agree with that. It seems we're lacking a few things. People don't see the rewarding side of what we're doing. They just want high pay and they don't want to put in the years to get there.
Oh man, you said it. You said it. And that's it. It's, you know, as a younger carpenter, you know, my employers, the bosses that I had, they were great carpenters, but they were, you know, very calloused and specific. I'll use the word masculine. In other words, if you weren't doing something right, you knew it right away. And they weren't worried about how they spoke to you or treated you. You know, if you had made a mistake, they were going to make sure that you knew it and that you felt bad about it and that you didn't make it again. So it was kind of like, I said this before, it was kind of like with your father or even your mother. You wanted to make them proud. The way I came up, it was, you know, I want to make more money, but I noticed certain people on the crews that I worked on had a better relationship with the owner or the boss, and that was because of their skill set. They were efficient, you know, they were good at their job. So always trying to jockey into those positions coming up over the years. It's like a hunger some people have, and I think some people don't. Nowadays, I see these kids, and they just expect just to know everything without actually doing it. And it's so bizarre to me. And I think a lot of that is just technology. You know, I grew up, we didn't have the internet, you know, cell phones, all of that stuff. So
yeah,
it's just a whole different, you know, feel.
The problem that we're seeing out here in California specifically, we've had a lot of kids that are in their early 20s come to us, and before we even talk about what their scope of work will be, what they plan on learning, and what they're going to be doing, they want to know about their pay, which is perfectly fine. I get that. But they don't even think about the end goal of, hey, I could be a carpenter. I could know what I'm doing. I can progress in this field to make more. It's, what am I going to make now? What am I going to make then? Okay, well, let's flip it around. What do you know now, and what are you going to know then? Because this is strictly performance-based. If you don't progress with us, how do you expect us to give you more money?
Right, right.
So that seems to be the way that it's been. And we've had a few of them where they're young and they're eager, and they come in, and like, I've got one right now, he's 20 years old, and this kid has drive like no other. Didn't even care to ask about pay in the beginning. We have a rate that we bring people in at. This kid just went to work. And it's like, you will be the one, and I've told him this before, if you stick with us, you will be the one that you could do anything you want to. And it's because his drive is there, and he cares more about learning than he does about, okay, well, how much am I going to get now and then?
It's hard, because we have some like that too, some younger guys. You know, they've been around a few years now, and they've had multiple raises, and they get this, I don't want to use the wrong word, but this sense of entitlement, like, hey, I've been showing up on time every day for 3 years. You know, Starbucks is paying X amount of dollars. I feel I should be making, you know, whatever percentage more. And you have to almost sit down with them and say, listen, you have to put in what you're taking out a week and then some. It's just, I mean, simple business, right? If you make $1,200 a week, you should be providing that in your skill set and the labor you're providing to the crew. It's as cut and dry and basic as that. But now we've got this gray area where all of a sudden time matters. And I do think it does if you're a loyal employee and you're there and you can be counted on. That is something, and that should, you know, carry some weight. But if your skill set isn't pushing the jobs through in a more efficient way, then I think it comes down to you either have it or you don't. You know, you mentioned this young kid, he's got that drive. That's what was all around me coming up. And now I look around on a job site, and it's almost kind of pathetic what I see from crew to crew. And it's, I don't know how we got here, because it's such a basic human need to have shelter and to have these people in the trades. But even when I was in high school, you know, they had career day and all that stuff, and they pushed college. So that's what I did too. And I worked framing summers and breaks, and, you know, I got an apartment, bought a motorcycle. All of a sudden I realized, hey, I'm doing okay working. You know, then it became like getting to class in the afternoon was kind of a burden, because I could stay and get an extra 4 hours in. So, you know, and all of my friends kind of, they did the same thing at that point. Everybody kind of went to work, and I don't see it a lot anymore. And it's bizarre to me. It really is.
Yeah, it's something that we're working towards. I think as an industry, people are working towards fixing it, but a lot of it comes down to lack of push. Computers got brought in. I've got a book, I'll find it somewhere. Computers got brought in and ultimately pushed out hands-on career paths. And that's when I think it all started. This was a shift that happened back in like early 2000s. Because I mean, everybody from there on out, you've either got people that work their ass off and do very good at what they do, or we've just got these, like, not to be mean, but like bottom feeders that don't provide anything to the industry. And that's kind of like, there's no happy medium with people, it seems.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And that's eye-opening too, because you guys are on the West Coast and you're saying the same exact thing we're seeing here on the East Coast. So, you know, I've heard that over and over again. I don't know what the answer is. You know, there's guys like you, myself, and there's plenty of other ones that are advocating and trying to to shed light on the trades. And, you know, I try to make it look, I try to present it in a way that it actually makes me feel. I enjoy working. You know, I'm not the type of person who will lay around on the couch all day. I mean, I do here and there, but I have to do something. It's just what I am. It's who I am. So the building, for me, I've been around it for so long, it's just almost like an extension of my personality. So I try to capture that feeling that I have when I do talk to these younger guys or anybody, even the older guys that are interested, you know. It unfortunately always comes back down to the argument of, well, how much money do you make? It's always about money. You know, it's, I get asked that all the time. How much does that roof cost? You know what? It's like, you know, and the other one that drives me crazy is the young guys now, they say things like, well, you're so talented, this and that. No, that's bullshit. It's, what I did was I just invested time to learn something. It's like being a guitar player, right? To get proficient at that and play like Eddie Van Halen or any of the greats, you have to spend hours and hours and hours and hours. And that's all I did. That is all I did. You know, I wasn't strong per se with math in high school. I always enjoyed math because it had a way of checking itself and you get a solution and you know you're right. But I wasn't, you know, I didn't take like crazy college math classes.
Things. That's like the phrase that you're lucky. You're lucky to be in the position you're in. No, there's no luck about it. Just worked my ass off to be here.
Well, and
hard
that's,
work, but the opportunity there.
I see that gap with technology. Some of the younger guys, I got a kid specifically in mind. Like there's an app for everything. So he wants to ask me about how do you figure this irregular hip. He goes to YouTube. There's no video on it. There's no app to download. No. Like the only way you're going to understand this, it's like when I was a kid, was to go get the encyclopedia and read about it, right? Or apply it in real time. There's no shortcut to learning a skilled trade using modern technology. I think it could be helpful. Like it's nice to have a laptop in the truck now or an iPod and the things you can find on your phone, the calculators and whatnot, that is helpful, but you still have to put the work in to acquire the skills it takes to be good at the job.
I think we kind of just live in the fast food society. I think this is just an overarching problem with everybody, is like they feel like if they try something once, they should be able to perfect it. And if it doesn't work once, it's not meant to be for them. And I think that's just an overarching problem. But I absolutely agree with you both, Ryan and Matt, that we need to change that and show people that you actually have to put in the work in order to what has compounded into creating the structures that both of you, Ryan and Matt, create. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into that. And I think that's also like one of the things that I was thinking earlier when both of you guys were chatting was, I think the industry would be worse off if it wasn't for social media and you guys were showing the process behind building these things. Because before that, everything kind of just lived in the shadows and we weren't going to rely on these teachers or other people that haven't had exposure to the trades to promote a positive image around it or a good career path. So it's like, you guys are the advocates. It's not the high school counselors that are pushing this because they don't know anything better. They don't have exposure to the trades.
Brick, I'm curious. Do you think that any of this comes from the fact that kids these days want overnight success?
Of course, man. Look at every like shortcut that is being sold online today. How to get XYZ in 2 minutes. Yeah. It's like,
it just seems like that's what it is. It seems like nobody sees the long-term vision and like, not to throw us completely off topic, but investing is a lot like that. You don't think so much about what's going to happen a week from today, 6 months from today. I'm thinking what's going to happen 15 years from now, 20 years from now. And I think that comes a lot with like the career path as well. You can't get into this expecting to learn everything overnight. And I think that's where a lot of people are turned off with it, is they get into it, they realize, shit, this isn't as easy as I thought. I've had so many people reach out to me and say, Matt, my boss isn't teaching me everything that I want to know. Like, well, how long have you been doing this? 3 months. Like, I'm surprised you know anything at all. Like, if they've even talked to you once, I'm surprised. This takes a long time to figure out. There, you have to understand that it's time spent on the company side as well, teaching you, who could just take off and that knowledge is gone. Like, it doesn't happen that fast.
You should have maybe have asked that kid too. Do you know what you want to learn? Because it's probably likely they're just meandering, and yeah, they expect someone to teach them all this stuff, but they don't have a direction for them. Anyways,
you have a great great view, Matt. You're in a really good place for your age. That's incredible. Like all of these things you're aware of, it's all been, you know, a slow thing for me to notice because I've been in it since the late 90s. But I mean, you already know this.
Well, my pops got into it about the same time, 90s and stuff. So like growing up, I've seen it like firsthand. I was 15, 16 on job sites, and he was telling me like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. So over the years, I've kind of just grown. It's been like embedded in me to see exactly how he's seeing these things. Mm-hmm. We don't have people that care. Like I'll be the first to say it, we've ran through employees because we can't get people that want to be forward thinking and can grow. So it's been difficult and it's been eye opening.
Yeah, it's strange. I used to put like help wanted ads in the newspaper, local news, you know, the Buffalo News. That then we had Craigslist, all those things came about. I would go to like the pharmacy and buy a burner phone and list that as the phone number because the call volume was so high. I would just leave it in my truck, you know, and there'd be 100 messages. Now you run an ad and you don't get one phone call. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, where are all of these people working? How are they living? Like how are people affording the just the basic cost of living in this world now? You know, I see these numbers, unemployment, this, that. I don't know. That's crazy to me. I don't see a bunch of jobs that have been created in the last 20 years that weren't, you know, necessarily there then. I mean, there's some with technology, but I mean, houses are still getting built like crazy. Crazy. And I do think, Breck, what you said about social media, I do think it's a great mode of transportation for education right now for the trades. Like we didn't have this, you know, I didn't have that to look at. So it was all hands on or read a book. So,
I mean, the way I look at it is like all of you guys and gals that are being the industry advocates. I mean, I would consider myself in that arena, but I'm not actually working within the field. But you guys, how I picture it is like you're the Michael Jordans of the industry that you're in. And if it wasn't for you guys, it would just be this black box if they wouldn't know what to expect from the industry. It's always nice to show people what it's actually like to be in the field.
Yeah. There was a stigma with it, right?
Good on both of you for killing that stigma, or at least attempting to rid it. It's a good effort. Ryan, you mentioned unemployment. You mentioned employment. You know, from what I know about you, you're working at a company, but you also have your own shop, the Roof Cutters. You know, from what I know, I think you were self-employed up until I believe the recession 2008. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there was a lot of things that happened then that caused me to kind of close the doors. Some personal family big events took place. And yeah, like you said, the recession and I have no regrets. And then as I got older, you know, back when I was early 20s, mid 20s, I mean, I went on my own. I was 23 years old. You know, I was building some big houses, custom stuff, and I was still figuring stuff out. I'm still figuring stuff out today. But back then I felt like I had something to prove to everybody, and I've kind of stepped back and just kind of taken it all in and realized, you know, hey, I don't have anything to prove. If I can spend a day doing something that I absolutely enjoy, you know, to make a living, that's kind of where I'm at now. So now I just kind of focus on, you know, what I can do to better myself, you know, better than I was yesterday or that last house. If maybe I messed up something or something didn't come out quite right, to kind of look back and zoom in and see, you know, what could I have done different to improve that? So the last maybe 10 years, you know, I'm in my 40s now. I've just kind of tried to polish things that I've been doing for years. So
I think when you stop trying to impress people in general, stop trying to put out this picture of who you are and just start being yourself, that you become like the absolute best version of yourself you can be. And I think that's something a lot of people struggle to find, is that balance of like, hey, I'm trying to be this, but who are you really? Right. So, I mean, I absolutely love what you're doing now. I think what you're doing is awesome. It all just seems so it seems so organic with you. Like, I'm watching you in this huge shop, just like going to town. And it's like, you just seem like you, you love what you do. You know damn well what you're doing and you're content. You're happy.
Yeah. And that's the crazy part, going back to the social media. You know, I had Facebook for, I don't know, 10 years now, but Instagram, I was fairly new to that. It's only been a few years. And when I got on there and I started looking at work, I really thought there was a lot of other people kind of doing similar things to me. And that was eye-opening, you know, fine home building, reaching out, wanting to do this and that. And I'm like, when did this happen? You know, because like you said, it just kind of stayed in the shadows. And you get on social media and then the world gets a lot bigger. And I started looking around and realizing, wow, I've just been stuck in my work for so many years. I mean, but how would you know without a platform like social media, you know, Instagram specifically? So that was kind of eye-opening for me.
At this point, you've done work with quite a few different people, huh?
Yeah.
As far as like the content side of things go?
Yep. MT Copeland, Fine Home Building. Trying to do something with JLC. They're a hard nut to crack. And then
are you gonna be out there at the end of this month?
Unfortunately, I won't. No, everyone keeps asking me that. Yeah, no, I do want to. I want to get to the International Builders Show too. I haven't been to that.
Oh, you have to go. You'd have a grand old time there. Well,
yeah, and this year I was going to do some teaching there. They reached out to me, another account on Instagram, kind of was organizing some stuff. So they put me in contact and we planned things. And then it kind of just went in a different direction for the building zone. So they had to nix a few things and I was one of them, which was fine. But yeah, that looks awesome. I really want to get there. Plus, I want to meet some of these people that I follow, because every day I go on Instagram, I'm just completely humbled and blown away.
Something that I find super interesting about what you do, and it's no secret, you specialize specifically in hand-cutting roofs. And I know there's another fellow out here in California that's doing it, but we don't run across a whole lot of site-cut roofs out here. And if we do, it's rarely any fun. It's typically straight gable end-to-end with a single pitch. And I'm kind of curious, like, how did you get into specializing in something like this? And is the market for it huge out there, or are you just monopolized on all the big projects? How did that work out?
Yeah. So it's kind of just, I always count my lucky stars when I think about that, because I'm in an area where the architecture, okay, so I'm in Western New York, we get a lot of snow. So our roofs are real steep and tall.
Yeah.
You know, we build for weight. We don't have the hurricanes and the strong winds that you guys contend with. So here we build very heavy houses, big, heavy roofs, and the pitches are all steep. And then the architecture, we have a lot of basic builds, but there's a few subdivisions, I'll call them, that are very high-end homes. You know, we have two professional sports teams here, so there's a lot of professional athletes. We build for lots of doctors. We have tons of hospitals. It's a big area. So I guess it kind of started 8 or 9, 10 years ago. We had multiple crews going. I came in and we saw what was happening pretty quickly. We were cruising through them and we'd get to the roof and everything would slow way down. And I had already been kind of trying to specialize in getting that going quicker. So I just kind of dove into it head first for 3 or 4 years. Like I would leave the job. I had a little notebook, leather bound notebook, and I would record what I believed was the hip pitches and the bevels and all of these things. So I had a reference for myself the next time I had a roof that was an 8-12 with the 12-12 or whatever the scenario. So I started working that out on my own time at home. I'd spend hours and hours in the garage spinning a framing square around, and then something would work. I would figure something out, you know, so then I would write that down. It got to a point where everything that I had written down in that notebook for years was all trash. It was close, but it wasn't right. So I was giving myself bad information for a lot of years there. I mean, everything was close enough where it worked, but it wasn't quite right. So it was just, you know, being persistent in that, and then, you know, doing more drawing and plan view and, you know, playing with the geometry and really understanding how two pitches kind of relate to one another up on top of a house. So necessity and interest, basically.
A lot of trial and error as well.
Yeah, for sure. I still change things to this day.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. I in fact, this one right behind me, I have this new idea where I've talked about with M.T. Copeland and Fine Home Building. Mm. It was in one of the two articles. We talked about hip shift and how it's necessary to shift an irregular hip off the actual center line of the material, which is true. But I also believe if you back the shoulders and bevel them the way that I do, that you can share the center of the material. And I've tried it with a bunch of different pitches and just some little models here, you know, at the shop, and it seems to work out. I just haven't figured out how to explain why it works out. So I have to figure out that answer. But this one behind me is figured. It's in the notebook, and I'm going to start cutting this tomorrow. So it'll be the first time I've tried that. So,
you know, Ryan, you mentioned something that stuck with me quite a bit, and it's something that I recall doing early on. Back, I've been in this industry as long as, like, the internet's been out the whole damn time. So I haven't any clue what it feels like to not have access to these resources. But you said that you would go home and figure these things out. You would go home and try to learn these things. And that's pretty much what I did the first, like, 5 years. I still do it today, but it was heavily back then. I always wanted to try to figure out why we were doing something versus just what we were doing. I didn't want to know, like, where I'm supposed to put these A35s, where I'm supposed to put this hardware, why am I putting that there? What is it doing for me? And I think that was key with learning early on and kind of catapulted me into the position I'm in today, where I know a little bit more than I should probably. I don't know, because I gave a shit enough to go home and learn it on my own. It didn't stop once I left the job site. And that's something that I see a lot of the youth today do. And I've had a few people that are like, hey, do you mind staying after a little bit and showing me this? And it's like, absolutely, any day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like a good majority of the people don't care. They leave it at the door, and they don't care to bring work home with them. But in my opinion, if you're willing to learn and focus after hours, that just means that you care more about your career path than most. And I like that you touched on that, because that's something that I did that like crazy in the beginning. And shit, I don't know half of what I should know.
You probably forgotten
more than I know, but no, that's awesome though. I think that everybody should be going home, read a damn book.
Right. Yeah. Or even just commit your thoughts to it, you know, while you're sitting there, you know, think about how your day went. And that's what I tell the guys that I'm around, you know, it's laid out, it's put right in front of you, and you're basically nailing a board on a line, and there's a certain angle here and there. While you're doing that, be asking yourself why. And that is where the growth is. When you start to wonder why you're doing what you're doing, then you begin to understand why it is that you're doing that. So I look at it like this. When I'm on site or during the day, when I'm being a production framing carpenter, that's practice time. The real learning happens after hours, like you said. You're going to learn a lot on the job, for sure. You know, repetition, it's like anything. But if you're not going to commit your mind to, you know, all the techniques and everything there is to know, because there's so much to know. I'm still learning. You know, I'm a 24-year framing carpenter now, and I get those aha moments where I'm like, wow, the whole time? I never noticed it, you know, or I never thought of it like that. So, yeah, for sure. People have to put the time in.
I hope that's something. I think with the social media push as well, it's something that a lot of people are doing as far as going home and learning. They're watching people like you. They're watching people like Tim Mueller with Awesome Framers, all these different people that are putting like, shit, I learned how to router out windows from social media. Like half the things I do today are because I've learned from you guys on social and changed the way that I worked.
Ryan, I got to ask, I follow you. I follow you pretty closely on social media. I think you had posted a story, I don't know, within the last week or so, but how much prototyping do you actually do in your shop?
Prototyping? Like,
for all your cuts?
All of it. So the first thing is, you know, we get the plan. This is what it looks like. Then we have to get the dimensions. Yeah. So that's been a thing that's kind of been coming up for me, because I have out-of-state roof cuts coming in and going out. So the transfer of information, it's really no different if it's 500 miles away or 5 miles down the road. So we get all the dimensions, and then I will literally sit down and calculate every piece before I pick my saw. It makes me more efficient when I get to cutting. Years ago, I would figure out enough of a roof, like I would figure out the common rafters, the end king common, and the hips. Then I would figure out one jack rafter, and I would cut that, and then I would pull my lengths down the jack rafter and then record them. And I did it that way for a lot of years, and it worked great. It got me really accurate, but then I realized how much time I was wasting. You know, while I'm supposed to be cutting, I'm now still calculating and recording numbers. So then I kind of tried doing all of it ahead of time, which was a big learning curve for myself, because then it became an organizing game. It was all about organization and marking up the roof plan and keeping things, you know, so it wasn't a disaster. And some of these roofs are really big. So that was, I still struggle with that, actually. Sometimes I have to get up, I'll walk. We have a little office here at the shop where I'm actually sitting. I'll have to walk around the shop, do some paces, just to kind of clear my mind, and I'll sit back down and look at it and say, okay, we're over here now. Mm-hmm. Let's get to this point, take a break, turn a corner, and we'll go this way. So, yeah, it's tricky.
So, Ryan, I'm sure there are some people out there that are listening that don't understand how any of this works, but with a normal truss roof, a truss manufacturer comes out, does a field measure, then they build to those numbers, and everything works 90% of the time. Are you going out and doing field measure as well, like once the floor is built, or how does that process look for you? Because, I mean, from what I see, you're just there with a set of plans going absolutely crazy.
Yeah, yeah, field measure for sure. So with the crew that I work on, I always try to be a part of that. So I'll go out with maybe one guy or two guys ahead of the crew while they're finishing one up, and we'll get the foundation squared up because we have basements here, full basements. So we start with a green board on top of the foundation, and I'll get that all snapped out perfectly square. I'll write the dimensions on the side of the foundation wall. So when we do start rolling floor joists and everything, and they're cutting pieces of box joists, they can look down and say, hey, this is 19'10". So now you roll all those joists, you cut the box, you should be able to hook your tape on and have 19'10". So we build in a little bit of growth there too, or to accommodate for it. So I like to keep things an eighth, quarter shy, because as we go up, you know, things swell. It just happens. It is what it is, but it is totally controllable. So I try to measure if we're real busy or I have one that needs to go out somewhere else. I'll get the foundation snapped out and then I'll leave. I'll head back and I'll start working it out right away. If I have some time and it's very complex, I like to measure the floor, which is basically the same difference. But yeah, that's the biggest, most important part. And then it's keeping layout. So we decide the contractor or the crew I'm on will just say, okay, this is the corner we're pulling layout from. We're going to pull whatever each way and go or back, whatever we decide. That gets recorded on the roof plan, and then I can stack all the studs and the ceiling joists across the roof in both directions as well. So there's a lot of little working parts, but it's all very basic stuff, and it's simple when you really think about it. It seems like a lot, and it can seem overwhelming, but it really isn't. I mean, they're just numbers, you know, they're dimensions, and then there's a layout, and over every layout is a jack rafter or a common rafter. It's really the same. It's like pulling your tape across, you know, your wall plates when you're plating and laying out for wall building days. It's really no different.
I'm curious why trusses aren't more common out there. Is it just because of the height? I mean, obviously steeper pitch, they can only transport so much.
Yeah, it is interesting. And here specifically, it's cost. So it is cheaper for the builders to purchase the lumber and have the framers hand cut it than it is to have the truss company provide the roof. Yeah, it's an interest. And I've actually been seeing that in other parts of the country now that we're trying to cut and ship a little bit more. I mean, we've been doing that for a while, but I'm really trying to get that going in a certain direction. But yeah, the trusses here, I couldn't give you a hard number on what percentage it is more, but you know, if I was, we'll just say a number, if I was $25,000 to cut and ship the roof, and it was going to be trusses here. The trusses would be 30 to 35,000. So it's
that's pretty I honestly didn't expect to hear that. I was kind of thinking it would be the opposite.
Yeah, it's basically cost is the big driving factor. I mean, there still is a lot of trusses here. There's some builders we don't work for. They're kind of stuck in very old pricing scales as far as the framers go. So there is a lot of trusses, but there's a lot of, you know, stick built, which is what we try to focus on. And some of these, to be honest, like this last one I just shared, you can't really put trusses on that thing. It was crazy. You know, I label the hips and valleys numerically or alphabetically. Like I went through the whole alphabet and came back to like A2, B2, C2.
A squared.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah, A squared.
My Lord.
So
yeah, that makes sense.
And we have had cut up roofs like that were trusses, and we do much worse time-wise because you get the crane in, you get everything set, and then there's holes all over the roof that you have to go back and overframe anyways. So for me, I look at that and I'm like, I don't see why we would do this. Why wouldn't we just cut the roof?
You know? See, that part makes sense to me. On the basic builds, it makes sense just slap trusses up and run with it. But I had a project not too long ago. It was around 6,000 square feet, and we dealt with that. It was a pain in the ass. It was trusses. It was cut up, not too bad, but nothing worked. The truss company kind of butchered some things, and we ended up framing a lot of it on site and couldn't use certain trusses because they just didn't work where they were going. So that makes sense. Not it looks cool on their paper, and I mean it works, but once you get it out there, shit doesn't always work out.
Yeah, right. And that's the part I like about, you know, hand cutting everything. You know, I mean, you get growth, but it is a little more important when you're setting rafter tails on a plate line to be, you know, more accurate than the bottom cord on a truss where you can just kind of shift it around and get things to plane in. So there's definitely a little bit more precision and accuracy needed. But again, these are all things that we can control. So if, you know, if a wall is 16 foot 10, you cut the plate 16 foot 10 or 9 7/8, give yourself a little room.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
I have to ask you, how long did it take you cutting these roofs before you actually felt comfortable enough to be doing this stuff offsite? Were you cutting them on site before?
Yeah, on site. Years. I couldn't pin that down, but four years ago, I think it was, coming up here in April. We always go to the, there's a AAA baseball team here, the Buffalo Bisons. We always go down with all the guys for opening day. It's fun. It's just something we've always done. 4 years ago, I was all caught up. We had a lot of work in front of us. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try to cut the roof before they pour the foundation. I got a week. It'll help because there's another huge one to do. So I did that. And I was on site. I was cutting rafters by myself. Concrete crew shows up. I walk over.
Oh, this guy's freaking crazy.
I walk over the end of the first day. You know, they got the footer in the ground and everything. And the one guy was smart enough to realize what he was looking at. He says, is all that a roof for this house that we're going to pour? I said, it is. So you guys better be right on. So I went over every day for a couple days while they were there, and we pulled the tape a few times, and it worked out. There were some areas that were off a little foundation wise, but nothing more than a quarter. So we were able to make everything, you know, work in that respect. So after that, I was like, well, shit, I mean, if I can do it there, who, you know, 3,000 square feet, 6,000 square feet, what's the difference? It's just more boards, you know,
just more the idea.
Yeah. And I always remind myself, it's just wood. When I start to get nerved up, or I'll open a set of drawings and the initial thought is, holy cow, you know, it's intimidating. There's a lot going on. Varying plate heights, multiple pitches. I just pick it apart, one piece of roof at a time. Take a ridge. Look at that. Look at the next one. Figure everything out.
You'd mentioned earlier that you're working alongside of some guys that are in their 30s and 40s. And I know you're a big advocate of just sharing everything that you do. But from what you see in the field, how much of this information and knowledge is being passed down? Like, are you teaching people on site or off site quite a bit? Like,
No. To answer that kind of simply, on site, not really. That's why I try to use social media for that. I feel like it's a better reach as well. But to be honest, there really just isn't an interest. Everybody, they kind of make it too hard right away. They just think, oh, it's too hard. And they don't, you know, they don't ask. There is one guy, a good friend of mine, Carpenter. We work together quite a bit. I show him as much as I can that he wants. So he'll take it in little pieces, you know. One day he'll ask me a question, you know, how are you getting the fascias to line up? So we'll work on that, you know, here and there over the course of, you know, weeks, a few months. And then he'll come back once he understands that. And so I am feeding him pretty much everything that I know in smaller doses. It's also, I feel there's certain aspects of the trade that are excellent for teaching on site. And I think that there's others that would be better done in a classroom type setting or not out in the elements with saws running and nail guns, but where the focus could be there. And I think, you know, roof cutting is one of those. Mm. When you're not under the gun and pressured, you know, we got to get this many walls up today. And, you know, did anybody order more 2x4s? We're almost out of studs. You know, when you got all that going on, it's kind of hard to zoom in on something that you really want to learn, which that goes back to what Matt and I said earlier.
It sounds like, you know, I think there's a balance here, but I think some of the youth just doesn't think construction in general is a viable career path. Some do, some don't. But I think also the view has changed a lot in the last several years, just everything with social media. We have like the big Home Depots and the Lowe's pushing these massive marketing campaigns, putting millions of dollars, actually getting people interested, putting tools in people's hands. But I'm curious what your take is, Ryan. How do you think we can get these young guns a lot more interested in this stuff and seeing it as a viable career path? I know that you're making an effort to change a lot of this stuff, but I'm kind of curious your perspective.
Yeah, I think kind of just that. I think we need more people like Matt and myself and, you know, Tim Uhler and these guys on the social media platforms to keep pushing it and pounding it out there and showing the trades in a more lighthearted light than, you know, the seriousness that it really is. Because, you know, job sites can be intimidating and, you know, for these newer generations, scary. But
yeah,
to shed light on, hey, this is fun, the camaraderie of it, you know, a group of guys and gals coming together to, you know, you show up and it's a pile of sticks day one, and at the end you can all kind of sit there and high five each other and say, you know, we made a living and look at what we built. You know, a lot of jobs, they'll pay you a ton of money, but there's no gratification there. That's the biggest thing that I take out of all this for me. Like, well, there's days now, you know, I'm in my 40s where it's a struggle. I leave the house in the morning and it's cold and blowing, and I'm like, gosh, I don't know how much longer I can do this. But then you get there and you're with your crew and, you know, you just kind of, you set a tone and you all kind of live and die together. It's like, okay, are we going to do this today? We're doing it. And then it's all hands in, and, you know, you build that bond, and you can carry that tempo or that cadence with you throughout each job. That's where efficiency is.
The radio on, the people singing along, dancing, like there's no better feeling than that. I think it's something a lot of people can't relate to. I brought my cousin on with me. He worked for me for a while. He moved back up to Idaho not too long ago, but oh, my voice cracked. Need some water. Anyways, we built this house together. It was a beautiful place. We got to the end of it though, and he looked at me and he calls me Bubs because that was my nickname growing up. And he's all, Bubs, we built this thing. I'm like, yeah, like we did. And for me, I was already years into this. I'm like, on to the next one. And he's like, no, but like we built this thing. And it finally clicked for him. And it was the coolest experience, like watching the sparks fly, knowing that he got some sort of satisfaction out of the hard work that we had put in leading up to that day. And I think that's eye-opening for a lot of people, is realizing you did something bigger than yourself. You built somebody's dream home right here. And he loves the industry still to this day. And I think that day had something to do with it.
Oh, for sure. That's so cool to hear.
As far as what you're saying, I think the only thing we can do is continue to share it in a positive way. And we're at a weird spot in I don't know, as a nation, we need more blue collar workforce. We do. Every industry is saying something about it. And I don't know if the number is correct or not, but they say that for every 4 retiring, we have 1 coming in. Mm-hmm. That's going to hurt in about 10 years.
I would believe that number. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, no, it's going to be bad. But one, I love that you're not gatekeeping anything. I think that's awesome. You may not see those results like right now, but I know for a fact, and like me personally, I look up to you. I love what you do. You are helping more people out there than you even know.
Oh, I really appreciate you saying so. That makes it worth it for me. That's kind of why, you know, some close friends, personal friends of mine, they had said that with Fine Home Building and MT Copeland, you know, a couple of comments were, well, you're just going to give it all away? Then everybody will be able to do what you do. And I thought about it, and that feeling never really crossed my mind. And I thought of it in a more excited way, like I could have future framers standing on my shoulder with something that I've offered to them to help them and help the industry that's been so good to me for half of my life, literally half of my life. I've been out there every day building. So yeah, it was when they got asked to, you know, do you want to teach this stuff? I was all in. Hell yeah, let's do it. And I get a lot of great feedback still to this day. It's the Copeland videos.
Oh, that stuff looked like a movie.
Oh, it was
amazing.
It was mind blowing. They showed up and I was nervous, you know, ahead of time and talking to them and getting everything set up. But when they showed up with all these vans and camera equipment and like the whole first day was just getting the lighting right and everything, it was very humbling to see.
Yeah.
You know, very, but it went well.
You know what? I've, like I said, I've probably learned as much as you've forgotten. I have a long ways to go in this industry, but I came into the whole social scene with a goal in mind for years I got told, oh, your dad's in the industry, your grandpa's in the industry. Like you silver spoon this, silver spoon that, like you're paid for. So like when I got into the whole social media scene, my goal was to be that for other people. I know that other people don't have family that have walked them into this industry, but if I can teach you a few things and help people out, I've won. I've done what I wanted to do. So my big goal with it, and I think yours as well, is to just give back as much as possible. And I don't know, I think it's got a long ways to go, but we're making little steps.
I think so. I agree. And you're a great ambassador for the trade. Like I love what you got going on in this whole thing, like this podcast you guys are doing. And there's a lot of them out there. That's the other thing. It's so vocal now. If you're looking for the information, it's literally there now, you know, where before, like Breck said, it kind of just lived in the shadows. Like it's out there. It's out there. If you go on social media and just type in construction, you'll get millions of hits. You'll be able to watch all sorts of stuff. That was never there. So I'm kind of counting on that being the changing, you know, aside from the government putting something out there on the news every night, like, hey, we need to get to work. Everybody, you know, I don't see that happening. But aside from that, I think the platform, you know, that you're on and a lot of other people, I think that's going to kind of be the mode of transportation to hopefully turn things around.
We have to make this shit look cool again. That's what we have to do. Like my grandfather, he's a badass carpenter. He was a mason by trade, but ended up building houses for himself. He's built half a dozen for himself. Like the American dream is owning a house. This man's built 6 of them turnkey. Like, like what are you saying? How can this industry be bad?
Everybody's going to have to be building their own given the housing prices. So,
yeah. And I, you know, that's funny too, because I've never, some of the best people I've met in my life were on a job site. You know, you mentioned, you know, your grandpa being a mason. Masons, I have some close friends that are masons. I love watching them work. It's, I don't know what it is, just the way the trowel's moving across the stones and the way they're moving their lines up. And it's just fascinating to me. And I'll sit there, you know, eating a sandwich on lunch, just watching them for an hour.
Last project I did with him, I watched him build a fireplace out of these little bricks, and he was 71 and he outworked the shit out of me. Don't even know how, but like his hands didn't have any sort of cuts or anything. I was bleeding. Like, I don't know how you're doing, but all those years, he's still doing it. Yeah.
Ryan, before we close out, we got a couple more and then we'll go into our fast five. But if there's anything that you could broadcast to the next generation about this career path, what it's done for you, but also what it could do for them, what would it be?
It builds character. It'll let you really know who you are. If you want to find out about yourself and you want to acquire some much needed skills and basically be a badass, get in the trades, do it. There's a lot of good people out there that are going to teach you and you're going to be part of a team that's always winning. Okay. There's never been a job that's been started that wasn't finished. You're always going to finish and you're going to do it together and you're going to meet a lot of great people. And you're going to make great money. That's the other thing they don't talk about enough. Like you can make a great living working in the trades, you know, apply yourself, listen to your mentors, the people that you're working with, you know, go out there and shadow them and watch the way their hands are moving, the way they approach, you know, the sawhorse or the way they're holding their saw or just the way their tool belt is made up and where they're putting specific tools. There's so many things to learn. And if you're into learning and you do want to, you know, make a decent living and acquire some skills, I mean,
I think it's something that it takes experiencing it to know what it's like, but when you're out there, I mean, sweating or colder than, I don't know, the snow on the ground, like there's a good feeling just building with people. So we've gone over work ethic, the next generation, education, how you got to where you are today. We've covered a lot of ground. I got one last question for you. What's next for you? You have any plans or projects or anything that you're excited about?
Teaching, you know, I see myself hopefully, being able to continue doing what I'm doing until I can't do it, but I would like to get a more, I don't know what the word would be, but a more solid location in the industry viewed as a place to go to learn roof cutting and roof framing.
Yeah.
You know, I love stacking them and nailing them together and that'll never get old, but I can't do that forever. And I would like to share my techniques and approaches and hopefully people can build on them. And I could look back someday and say, man, these guys are amazing. Like, I wish I would have thought of that, you know, I'd like to leave a little mark, a piece of myself in a trade because it's been good to me. It has highs and lows. You know, the work was always there. The trade was always there for me when I needed it. So I'm grateful for that. And if I can help share that feeling and what it's done for me with maybe one person, two people, that's great. Then I feel like I've done my job.
I think you've made your mark on this industry, and I think you have a lot of people backing you, ready to take you wherever you plan on going with that teaching and education. So I'm looking forward to it.
What does the phrase "bred to build" mean to you?
Ooh, in a sentence or less. To me, it means it's what you have inside of you. It's your offering.
I love it.
Spot on.
Ryan, thanks for joining us on the podcast. Before we let you off the hook, and we want to plug where everybody can find your amazing stuff, where can people find and connect with you?
You could check out Instagram. It's roofslayer2681. I'm also on Facebook. It's just my name. You'll find a million of them. There's a lot of me's out there. Or also Instagram, Roofcutters Incorporated. Which you can check that out. I just kind of started working on that.
Perfect. And then we'll
to follow that along.
We'll link the MT Copeland stuff down in the description along with some fine home building stuff as well.
Yeah, that would be great.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bread to Build podcast. If you like this podcast and you like what we're doing, drop us a review. If you'd like to join us on the podcast or have topics that you'd like us to cover, please send us an email at breadtobuildpodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you guys next time on the Bread to Build podcast.